Okay. Seder, shkoch tziv for hosting us here tonight. We are right in the middle of the laws of Boer, so we'll just do about a 1 minute summary review of the basic point of Boer that we mentioned in the past, and we'll go on to tonight's topics. Basically, we know that Boer is separating. Again, we've discussed what exactly the parameters of separating are. The main points that we mentioned, if you remember, are number one, that you have to have a mixture in order to have a problem with Boer, meaning if there's no mixture of whatever thing you do want and whatever thing you don't want, we said that it's not really a question of Boer whatsoever. And the examples we gave a number of examples. One of them is, let's say you have, you know, bottles, you have one bottle here, one bottle here, one bottle there, or foods, a big food here, big food there, big food there. So whatever you might do to separate one type from the other is not at all Boer because they're not really mixed. Each one is separate, each one is in a separate place. Another example we gave of that, if you remember, according to many poskim, we said that if you have soup and very big pieces of chicken or meat or even big pieces of vegetables in the soup, then many poskim, well, that's also not boer. If you want to, let's say you don't want chicken in your soup, so you take out the piece of chicken from your soup. So many poskim, well, if it's a big piece of chicken, then that's actually not considered a mixture either because it's not really mixed with the soup. It's two totally different entities. They don't mix. Okay, they're just not the same type of thing. They're not even close to being a mixture. So we said that also, according to many, is okay.
So, I mean, basically, if, like, somebody doesn't want their carrots, but see, like, they're cut into little pieces, and it is...
Little pieces is probably more of a question.
If you have a big piece of carrot, and you took just the carrot out, and that's fine.
So that might be okay. Again, it's hard to... There's no exact rules on exactly what's considered a big piece or a little piece, because it's not like in the Gemara. This is, like, one of the things that the Achronim, the Poskim talk about. So they were talking about, like, let's say, like, a big piece of chicken, like a, you know, like a big, like a thigh, or like a big piece of white meat or something like that, or maybe like a big piece of meat. So a carrot, I think, again, there's no exact thing. I would have to say, like, it'd have to be like a nice chunky piece, not like a little small thing like that. Right. Yeah, thanks. But again, it's not an exact thing. So that's number one. In addition to a mixture, so we said that you have to have three conditions in order to permit Boer. Meaning, if it's a mixture, so we said you have to have three things that you have to, in order to allow it. And they are, if you remember, number one, that you have to take the ochel mitoch psola, you've got to take what you want from what you don't want. And we discussed this also, we said that Boer is not just about the food from the waste, but Boer is also about food that you do want from food that you don't want. If you remember that, you have two foods and you want one right now and you don't want the other, but they're both edible. So we said that's still Boer, but if you take the one that you do want from the one that you don't want, so that will be okay. That's number one. Number two, we said that if you do it biyad, with your hand as opposed to with a utensil, then it would be okay. And number three, if you have the third condition also, then it's miyad, it's for immediate use. Meaning you're planning on using it at the meal, within, you know, the meal right away, not for later in the day. So if you have all three conditions together, then you're allowed to do Boer. Okay? So we are in the middle of discussing different cases of Boer. This week now, this what we'll do is talk a little bit about the second and third condition. I mean, what are the parameters of biyad? What does it mean to do it by hand? And what does it mean to have miyad? Meaning you have to do it shortly before you use it. What does that mean? Okay. So let's start with biyad. All right. So you have to use your hand. Okay. You can't use an instrument in order to do boer, in order for it to be permissible.
So, a different instrument though, or usually like as a utensil?
Okay, so that's the question. What's defined as an instrument that would be permissible, and what would define as an instrument that would be problematic? Okay, so if you look here in the Shulchan Aruch, I'll just get the basic point here. If you have it open in Siman Shin Yud Tet, and take a look. Shin Yud Tet, it's the very first Seif. We read some of it a different time. We'll read it now. Okay, Shin Yud Tet Seif Aleph. Okay. So let's see what he says here. He says, we have it. I see what we're up to. Oh, you're almost there. Okay, good. Okay. So basically what he says is like this. Habor ochel mitoch psolot, somebody who takes the food that he wants from that which he doesn't want. Or you have two types of foods, and you want one and not the other. Uvora min min acher, and you take one from the other. Benafa uvechfara chayv. If you use a nafa or a kfara, okay, sifter or a sieve, then you're chayv. That's boer doraisa. Bekanon v'tamchoy pater aval aser. If you use a kanon or a tamchoy, it's pater aval aser, meaning you're exempt. You're not chayv, but it's still aser. What does that mean? So that basically is usually assumed to be an iser derabanan. Okay, so we have two levels here. And then he says, "V'in bera b'yado," and if you use your hands, "kadei la'achal alter," in order to eat it right away, mutter, then it's permissible. That's what we just said. Okay, if you do it for immediate use, it's permissible. If you do use it with your use your hands, and we have two different levels of utensils here. One is the doraisa, which is nafa ukfara, which is sift or receive, and kanun atamchoi is the darabanan. Kanun is basically like a funnel, okay, and tamchoi is basically like a big plate of some sort. Okay, the question is, what's the difference between the doraisas and the darabanans? Meaning, how do you understand the difference between the idea of these types of utensils? Any suggestions? Okay, again, we have sifter and sieve, which are doraisa, and then we have funnels and plates of some sort, which are darabanan. What's the difference in the function of the two?
A lot less effective.
Ah, exactly. Okay, as opposed to sifter and sieve, which are exactly. That's right. Right. Those are designed for boer. I mean, that's their whole purpose, is to separate. Okay, that's what the Mishnah Berurah says here. If you look in the Mishnah Berurah, in Aleph and Bet, so that's exactly what he points out. He says in Aleph, Sifkat and Aleph, Shebinafa v'kfar achayev, Shezehu derech b'ra, so that's the way of Boer, meaning you use a sifter or a strainer or a sieve or whatever to separate, again, either with flour or with other things. That's what's used for. Afilo yebedato lechal alter, even if you wanted to use it right away, you're chayev Boer because you used a kli, used a utensil. B'kanonu atamchoi, so he says here, Rashi quotes Rashi, that it's basically a wooden utensil which has like a hole with a pipe, which is basically like a funnel, where he says, and then read it inside, basically he says that it's wide on one side and narrow on the other side. And he basically says that, and the tamchoi we said is a big plate, the idea is that it's boer kela achar yad. De'ikar brer eina el benafo kfar. This is not the regular method of doing boer. Okay, the regular method of boer is to use a strainer or a sifter or something like that. This is like an unusual method of doing it. So that's why this is only going to be derabanan. Okay? So now the question is, what would be practical applications of either of these principles here? I mean, what would be the questions that you would think of? That would be a question of what would be possibly a utensil. That would be a question that you that might be other. Okay. Good. Okay. Excellent. So let's start with a couple points. Right, some of these we already may have talked about previously, but we'll go over it again. What is the status of silverware? Okay. I mean, let's say that you want to let's think of an example here. We'll take our soup example because we're already talking about soup. Or let's say in cholents, all right, something like that. You have beans and you have barley and you have onions and pieces of meat and it's all mixed up. And it's all a mishmash. And let's assume for now it's a cholent, which is all a mishmash. So let's say that you only want the potatoes, let's say. All right, again, you can substitute any example into this. It's just an example. But any case where this comes up, where you have some kind of food, which is a mixture of different things, and you only want one. Okay, so you say, I only want the potatoes. I'm going to take out the potatoes. I'm going to eat them right now. And I use my fork, or my knife, or my spoon. Is that okay? What's the issue? I mean, what would be the question? What analyze the case.
Is a fork an extension of your hand, or is it a thing designed for boer?
Okay, exactly. So just back up for a second. Well, first, is it boer? So if I tell you that it's a cholent where everything is mixed together, the answer is yes. That's a tarovet. That's a mixture. So you would be subject to the question of boer. And you say, well, I'm going to eat it right away. So it's immediate use. That's fine. Okay. What am I taking? I'm taking what I want or what I don't want. You're taking what you want. So everything is good. The problem is, if I use a utensil, then I'm still not allowed to do it. Right. So now the question becomes, if I tell you that using a fork or a knife is a utensil, that's a kli, then I still can't do it. I can't take out my potato on Shabbos because that's boer. I use the utensil. So the question is, basically, do we say that silverware is considered to be a utensil or not? So that's the question. So, I think I'm the only one that has a Shmir Shabbos here. I can read you what he says. So this is.
Does that still apply? Say if it's in the pot and you took out with a ladle quite a bit of the troll and put it into a plate. Now that it's on the plate, you only eat the potato.
Same question.
Okay.
Same question. The ladle also is a question.
That's how it happens anyway. People eat the potato. You don't eat potato and the beans and everything together at the same time.
Right. So that could be, one could argue, even if I tell you that the fork is a problem, we'll see what I'm going to say in a second, but even if that would be a problem, that if you want to eat the whole thing and you can't eat everything at the same time, so eat one, then eat the next, that might be okay. That's why I gave you the example where you only want the potatoes. You don't want the rest of the stuff. So that's a better example. Right. But again, we didn't give you the halacha yet. That's just the question. So the post can basically say the following. Okay. I'll tell you what it says here in the Shmir Shabbos. This is what Rav Moshe Feinstein says, and the Minchas Yitzchak or Yitzchak Yaakov Weiss. Most of the posts say like this. All right, tell me if you think this makes sense. He says, "Bichlal yad," okay, included in a hand. What's included in being done by hand? Nechshavim gam kaf kapit mazleg v'sakin. We all speak Hebrew, right? We're in Israel. We know what these things are, right? Okay? What's the difference between a kaf and kapit? Everybody remember that?
Tablespoon.
Right, very good. Okay, I messed this up a few times. Asked for one, I got the other. I forgot which one I was asking for. But you got the point. Okay, I mean, all the kinds of silverware, all right, those are all included in being your hand. Okay? If they're being used, and this is where it gets tricky, if they're being used as a yad arucha, as an extension of your hand, and they're not helping to actually do the act of separation. And I'll tell you the example he brings here. He says the example is when you take out a piece of meat from your soup, okay, that's a good example we're just saying, using a fork in order to eat it right now. Okay? So he says, and he has one or two other examples also. Now, again, the meat and the soup that he's talking about, and he says this in the footnote as well, is a case where it's a big mixture, okay? More like my cholin case. If it's a case of soup and a humongous piece of meat, so then maybe, you know, I said before, there might not be a mixture in the first place. But if it's a mixture, okay, you take out a piece of meat from your soup. The other example he gives here, let's say you have a piece of meat which has bone or fat on it, and you want to take off, you want to only eat the meat and not the fat, and you use your fork and your knife to cut off the meat from the fat which is attached to it. Mm-hmm. Is that boer? So he says again, that case also, if it's being used as an extension of your hand, okay, that's permissible. What does that mean that it's an extension of your hand? How do you understand that? What do you think that means?
As if you use your hand instead of like the utensil.
Okay, meaning could you use your hand if you wanted to?
Yeah. Help.
In theory, you could, right? Do you want to? Probably not, but you could. So that's what he says here. Again, this is from Rav Moshe Feinstein and a number of other poskim. This is what's usually accepted lahalacha. As long as you could potentially use your hand in order to do it. So I could stick my hand into the cholent and take out the piece of meat. I could pull like this and pull the fat or the bone away from the piece of meat. All right. Any example like that where you could use your hand and you choose to use a silverware, why? Just because it's easier. It's more convenient.
More civilized.
Okay. So that, more civilized, definitely. So that's permissible, right? That's mutter. The problem is if it's a case where you can't really use your hand. Anybody think of an example of that? What would be a case where it's very difficult to use your hand?
Peeling carrots.
Okay, so that's going to be a question. Do we talk about peeling carrots and cucumbers yet? Do we speak about that? All right, we'll talk about it now if we didn't talk about it, and if we did, we'll review it again. A case like that, if it's very difficult to do it by hand, so it could be, and we'll, there's another reason why maybe it's still okay, but it could be that might be a problem. I mean, it could be that in that case, if you use a knife to cut something, and you couldn't have done it with your hand alone, then it could be, according to this, that it might be a problem. I mean, that might be a problem of boer.
You had mentioned the cucumbers and carrots.
Okay, oh, we did mention it then. We did mention it. Okay, so we'll go back. We'll review it again. Okay, we'll go over it again. We'll get back to that at the end. Okay, but that's going to be a question, meaning something like that you can't use your hands for, so then it might be a problem. Another example might be in a liquid. If you have a drink, I don't know how this would work exactly. An easy example is like this. An easy example is, let's say you have like oil together with something else, like for a salad dressing or something, I don't know exactly. And the oil is like resting on the top and the rest of the liquid is on the bottom, so it's separate. Mm-hmm. But they do touch at some point, and according to many posts, that's still considered to be a mixture, okay? Because they're all in the same cup, even if one is on the top and one is on the bottom. You couldn't possibly take out the oil with your hand. It won't work, because your hand, you can't, it won't come out. So in that case also,
would you say?
What?
Salad dressing of that type would be problematic.
I didn't say that. No, it depends on what you do with it. It depends on how you make it, what you do with it. If you had something like that and you separated the two types with something, certainly with a utensil, it might be a problem. But to give me an example of when, you have to figure out when it would be relevant. You could make a salad dressing.
She was making the salad dressing, and then we had a salad on the table on Shabbos. And there was the separation there, I mean, between the two. But they do touch at one point.
Right.
But then, like, taking in a salad dressing bottle.
Right, you mix it up, so that's fine. That's fine, for sure. What?
It's mixing it.
Yeah, exactly, the opposite. Okay, so that would be fine. Just trying to illustrate the point. Think of a better example, but that's what that would be a problem if you have a case where you have to use your hand. We'll see if we can think of any more examples as we go along. Let me give you some other cases here. What would be the halacha in the following case? What would be the halacha if you have... I'll give you a few examples. Okay, number one. Now, let's say you have a spoon, what do they call it? A slotted spoon? There's a name for it. A spoon basically has holes in it, okay, that you use to take out solid and liquid drops through the bottom. What's that called? It's called a slotted spoon, no?
I know what you're talking about. I mean,
what's it called?
It's like you put it into a big serving spoon, but it has holes in it. So the liquid will stay.
So the liquid will stay in the pot or whatever, and the solid you can take out.
All it is like powdered sugar when you take it like this, and you start sprinkling, and the thing comes out of the bottom. Yeah, but I've never heard this kind of spoon.
Regular? Yeah, I'm sure you have.
Sure.
Can I go look in your cellar? Yeah. Second
thought. That's a good enough try. That's great. That doesn't usually happen, but. For when we get to cooking, we'll have to do some demonstrations of how to cook on Shabbos. It'll take 2 hours. They'll go make some food, you know, put it on the hot tray or put it on the fire. I say, okay, this you can do, this you can't do. Really? Oh my gosh, I'm sorry. I would have brought one myself. Wow. All right. We'll have to show you. We'll have to bring one next week for show and tell.
Well, we never use that. Okay.
Okay. We also have. We don't all use ours very often either. We have.
It's kind of liquid. I come from, if you weren't on Shabbos and you wanted to get the potato that have leave the liquid behind, this is perfect for it. It leaves liquid behind. And
yeah.
It's like it's doing
problematic. Just use his hands.
That's right. He just uses his hands, right? Yeah. Very good. All right.
Then we wouldn't be civilized.
Okay. We said anything about civilized. We just learn halacha. We don't have to be civilized, right? Okay. So the halacha is, if I ask about what the halacha would be about using such a spoon, the answer would be that it's probably usur, right? Why? Because even though, let's say you're using the spoon to take what you do want, the ochel, from what you don't want from the psolet, but that's clearly a utensil which you could not do with your hands. So that's very clear that would not be allowed to use that type of utensil on Shabbos. What else could we use it for on Shabbos? Let's say you like meatballs and sauce. You want to take out the meatballs and not the sauce. So you could use that kind of spoon with the holes in it. Any of those kinds of cases where you're using it as a separation tool and you couldn't do it as well with your hand, so that's going to be a problem. Okay, and that's what he says here. I don't remember exactly where it is here in the Shemira Shabbos, but he says it here somewhere. That's definitely going to be a problem. Okay, let's say another example. What is the halacha on the following case? Maybe this is something that happens to us sometimes. I don't know if it happens to you. First, do you ever have a case where you have, let's say, like noodles that were cooking from before that are still soaked in water? Mm-hmm. On Shabbos? During the week, we always have Shabbos, but it's a good example. I'll give you another case where it may be more relevant on Shabbos. But let's say for now, take that example. It's an easy example. Okay, yeah, meat with gravy or something like that. So the question is, if you wanted to take out the meat or the noodles and not take out the liquid. So one way to do it, let's say you don't want to use a borer utensil, okay? Meaning, if it's a borer utensil, it's going to be usur d'oraisa. And the spoon that I told you before, the spoon with the holes in it, or a sifter, or a strainer, those things are going to be usur d'oraisa on Shabbos. That's a real borer utensil. Let's say you don't want to do it that way. Simple. Let's say you take a pot, okay? The stuff is in a pot. Meat and gravy is in the pot. The noodles with water are in the pot. And you take the top of the pot, and you open, it's covering the pot, and you open the top a little bit so that the liquid can all pour out. And this thing, okay,
the lid
is covering the rest of it so the solid doesn't come out. Or I don't know if there's a way to do it in reverse. So would that be a problem on Shabbos? There's two reasons why it would be a problem on Shabbos, actually.
Bad and good.
Right, number one, you're taking out what you don't want from what you do want, the psoleh from the ochel, that's not okay. And number two, it's also a utensil, okay? Right, so it's not isur d'oraisa because it's not designed for borer, but according to many poskim, this is mentioned in Rav Elyashiv in... a Hebrew sefer, the Rosh Hashanah, and also in one of the English books called the Shabbos Kitchen, which you may have heard of. So they mention also that using a top pot as a cover to strain water or something like that is going to be a problem also because of the kli, because it's like the case of the plate that we had in the Shulchan Aruch, like the case of the funnel. They could be used for separation, but that's not their design. That's not what they're designed for. But you could use it. So you say, that's also d'oraisa.
Just contrast it, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Opening a can of tuna.
Oh, so that was exactly what I was going to say next. That was my example. Okay. Right. Right. So that's
make a hole in the bottom.
Right.
The clear.
So that was my practical example of the same principle. Okay. If you open a can of tuna on Shabbos, how do you use the tuna? Either if it's with water or with oil. Either one. Oil is probably a little harder.
Before Shabbos.
So the best thing to do is to do it before Shabbos. If you open it on Shabbos, what do you do? can you strain out the liquid? So one way of straining out the liquid, at least what I usually do, is to take, you know, the top of the container and smash it down and pour the water out through the little hole on the side or something like that, or the oil. So I'm sorry, I should have explained. That's what I do during the week. If I do it on during the week. On Shabbos, you're right. On Shabbos, it's a problem. Why? Again, 2 points. Number one, you're pouring out the bad from the good. And number two, you're using that as a utensil, which is going to be probably Aser Darabanan. So what do you do on Shabbos? What do you have to do if you want to eat tuna that you didn't make before Shabbos? It's not so fun. Not
mix it in with the water.
Basically, so the only way that you really could do it is either mix it all in together, which is probably really mushy and not so good. The only other thing you could really do is try to take out the chunks of tuna and take those out, in which case, if you use your fork to take out the chunks of tuna or your spoon, so use the silverware, which, as we said, is an extension of your hand. You could take it out with your hand if you wanted to. It's a little bit messy, but you could do it. And you're taking out what you want from what you don't want. So it's still going to be very liquidy and very mushy, but it's a little better than, you know, than eating the whole thing straight.
Okay, so hypothetically.
So that's why you should do it before Shabbos.
If someone else were to do this, a friend of mine, you make holding the bottom anyhow. You make holding the bottom so you don't make a cleave. You take top off and make a cleave.
Okay.
Holding the bottom, it drains out by itself. 90% of it comes out by itself. I put it into a bowl, and once I take the top off, there's no more vacuum suction. Most of it goes out the bottom. I haven't done anything purposely.
How do you make the hole?
How I make the holes, I usually use one of the bottle cork openers, cork screws.
Okay, that's smart. I've tried to do it with a knife, and it doesn't work with a knife. And also, you probably just cut yourself. Okay, very good.
So occasionally, I'll partially open it from the bottom, and just do a two slides, so it's not very open,
so
just to have it broken, and then I open the top part.
All right, so good question. So if you do it that way, so basically what you're saying is that a lot of liquid comes out, and the tuna itself does not come out.
Afterwards.
And hold on a second. So you're actually making the holes on the bottom of the can, so it'll
so
drain
when
the liquid.
I take the top off, I don't make a cleave. When I take the top off, there's a question of making a cleave if I take the top part off.
You're going in reverse. You're still using it.
I made holes in the bottom.
Yeah, you didn't use it as a cleave to
destroy the cleave. Right. Take the top off.
Right. So that's a good question. So if that's not your intention, could be that it's okay,
if you just had a regular plate, so that's a problem. Just tilting it and then the gravy,
you can't do that. What you could do is how you use the plate. We don't know it doesn't say how you use the plate. I can make up any scenario like that and use the plate in any way, but that would probably be okay.
Is there the whole thing of tuna into the plate?
Oh, so that's another example somebody mentioned. Yeah, that's another possibility. What you could do, it depends on what kind of tuna you have. So in Israel, I find that this is probably not so easy to do. Maybe Starkus is better. In America, at least from where I come in America, this was possible to do. Basically, what Mark is saying, take the whole thing, open it up in whatever way you open it up, and then you put it like that.
Right.
Okay, smash it down, pick up the can, and now you have. So the question is, how solid is the tuna? So some tuna, if it's very solid and chunky, then the liquid will just pour out everywhere over here. Just be careful not to make a mess. And you have your big chunks of tuna in the middle, and you could use it. Right, so that would be fine.
Are you allowed to do this just to help it?
The best thing to do is take out the chunks of the solid part of the tuna first. Once you start doing like that, I think it is a problem. But if you take out most of the solid chunks of tuna first, and then afterwards you do that, then that would be fine. I found in Israel that it's hard to do that. I find here that the tuna that I have is too mushed up. If you don't like this, you'll just have a big mush everywhere. But maybe it depends which brand you buy. Maybe Starkus is better than
Starkus.
I often get the Israeli brands. I often buy the Israeli brands. So maybe Starkus is more possible. Yeah. Okay, fine. So that you could probably do. Your example is a question. We'll have to learn at some point later about making a clue with the tuna cans, about making a hole in that way. We have to get to that. But
Before you take the top off, it doesn't do much.
I would say the best thing to do is probably to do that and then right away take out the tuna from the can. And then if it drains, then whatever's left, you can take the rest of the tuna that's left. But first, right when you do that, take out the tuna. Both because for the cleat aspect, that's better, which again, we haven't learned about. But in terms of making a cleat, if you're trying to ruin your cleat by making a hole, the best thing to do is to take out the tuna right away. How would you do it? You would open up the top and then make holes in the bottom, or you would make the holes in the bottom first and then?
You've got to make holes in the bottom first because the top's open.
I got it. Okay, so then that might work then. It might work.
Unless you can take the top all the way off.
Right. Here. I would say, yeah. Okay, it's not your intention. You're right. That's a good example.
You came up with that?
With what?
That idea.
Yeah. Let me think it through a little more. It seems like it might be okay. I mean, if that's not your intention at all, and you're not even trying to get the liquid, you're just trying to get the salad. So as long as anyway, when you're done, you would pick out the salad anyway.
Yeah.
So that might be okay. I'll think it through if any other ideas. I'll let you know. Okay. Very good. So that's another example of Boer with a cleat. I'll give you a few other examples here also. What about an apple, what do they call it? An apple core peeler? I forgot what it's called. Mm. And I'm talking about, basically you put the apple in and then the apple thing basically takes the core out of the apple and the rest of it comes free.
I've got
free.
One of those, you want to?
Yeah, yeah, right. That's another example.
Yeah.
Show and tell. Yeah. So we have one, and so my wife asked me about it a little while ago. And I hadn't even thought about it in terms of Shabbos. At first I thought probably it was not okay, because that's definitely a utensil. We'll see in a minute why maybe it is okay.
Can't find it again.
All right. It's somewhere. All right, I guess you can't find it. Oh, look at that. Okay. Let's see here. This does not look like the one that I have at all. Look completely different.
It's the advanced version.
Oh, I see. maybe I have the advanced version. You have the basic version.
You want to see it in action.
You don't have to take off an apple just for us, but just show us how to use it. Let's see.
Imagine.
You don't have to take an apple on.
I can understand why that one may be problematic. We've got one where actually it decores it, but it cuts.
Yeah, I think that's the one we have also. It's like a circle. It's like a circle thing in the middle with a metal thing around it, a circular thing.
Yeah, and then it cuts it off. So then I would think maybe different, because that's actually. That's
you're talking about the flatter one that you just go like this.
Right. Yeah, that's one that we have also.
So you might have one of those too.
No, but this one, so you just stick in the middle.
Right.
This is more like if you're making like a dessert or something like that.
I see.
And you still want it whole,
uh-huh.
without the cuts.
I see.
You just stick the straight through and it cores the middle.
I got it. Okay. I think the halakha question will be the same either way. So what do we think? Is that going to be okay or not okay? What do you say? Okay. Say okay? Not okay. Yeah. All right, so is that a utensil? I would say absolutely that's considered to be a Bora utensil. One would think that it's probably... okay, so if you...
What about the cutting?
Yeah, but what about the other one? Because that is not... The purpose of that is to remove the bad. Whereas the other one is actually to... It's effectively removing the bad, but it's actually cutting
out. So the thing is, either way, even if you say that you're taking the good, either way, if you say that it's a utensil, it's going to be. It's not going to be biad. It's not going to be doing it with your hand. One would think it should still be a problem.
You couldn't do it with your hand, I see.
Right, meaning meaning you could do it with your hand, but not as a, I mean, this will be much more effective than with your hand. Not only because it's convenient, but because it's not going to get your hand dirty, it'll do a better job. So that's what he means here, and what Moshe meant, and the others meant that it's going to be more, it's going to be helpful, it's going to facilitate the action of borer. This apple core peeler, whatever they call it, definitely facilitates the action. So let me tell you, that's basically what the Shmir Shabbos says. I'll say something else interesting afterwards. The Shmir Shabbos here says, also in Parag Gimel, he says, where is it here? Where is it here? Okay. I thought it was here, and unfortunately I do not see it. Ah, here it is. Okay. He says, Ein leishtamesh v'machshir miyuchad lotzat gal'inei zeitim o libo shel tapuach v'chadom. You shouldn't use a special machshir, special appliance or utensil, to take out the pit or whatever from an olive or the middle of an apple. Gami muvtach shemiktzat. Well, actually, I'll wait on that for just a second. Okay, that's the halacha. And who does he get this from? So he says this is the idea that the main point of what you're doing is to take out the inside, and you're doing it with a utensil. Now, here's the interesting thing. Okay, so the question is, we mentioned before. Okay, we mentioned last week. In the case of the fly in the soup, or all those kinds of interesting examples, okay, how are you allowed to, and if so, how are you allowed to take out the fly from the soup or other kinds of dirt or stuff that's mixed in?
Yeah, take out quite a bit. So
right, that's what we said. Okay, good. So we said that basically, if you take out a little bit of the soup or the liquid or the drink, whatever it is, with the fly, so that's okay according to the Mishnah Berurah, and also according to the Chazon Ish. But according to the Mishnah Berurah, it's okay. Because of the fact that you're not really separating the mixture. The mixture of the liquid and the fly are still together. Just you took out a mixture of liquid and fly from the rest of the liquid in the cup. So the mixture is still present. It's just somewhere else. So Mishnah Berurah says that's okay.
Continue eating the soup even if they remove the fly from the soup.
Okay, so that's a question. It's usually assumed that that's not going to be a halakhically relevant point, what you're saying. we could start asking about questions like that, but let's assume for now, even if you wouldn't need the rest of the soup or the drink, let's assume still that it would be...
whiskey, then.
Yeah, and so I had this case just the other day. I had this case where I did something with milk or something, and then suddenly a fly, just a tiny little bug just flew right into the milk. Like, ooh. And I actually poured the whole thing down the drain. I was too scared. It was like, ugh. Anyway... So that's what the Mishnah Berurah said. And the Chazon Ish had a different understanding of that. He said that also that it's okay, but not because he didn't like the mixture idea. He said that that's not okay because you're taking out the mixture of the liquid and the fly together. That doesn't help. He felt that it's because it's on the top of the surface. Okay, I mean, because it's on the top of the surface, it was never really considered a mixture in the first place. According to the Chazon Ish, if it was in the middle of the cup, not on the top, then he would think there's a problem to take it out. And according to the Mishnah Berurah, it'd still be okay. Again, we're not going to go into that so much right now, which is an interesting point. The question is, how does that apply here? So based on, let's take the Mishnah Berurah, okay? If the Mishnah Berurah says you can take out a little bit of the good together with the bad in order to permit it, what might you argue in this case of the apple?
That you're taking part that's edible. If that were a little bigger, this is kind of really small. Oh. If this is a little uh-huh. bit wider, and you uh-huh. put it down, you have edible core that I can get.
Oh, exactly. So I found in Rabbi Rubiat's book, if you're familiar with the 39 Malachos, I'm assuming you've heard of it, the four-volume gray book by Rabbi Rubiat in English. Never seen it?
Yeah.
Do you have it? You have it there. It's over there.
Yeah, we have
one volume. All right, fine. Where'd the rest of them go? They got lost.
Whatever. Somewhere in the move,
I see. All right, there's somewhere in the middle of the ocean, right? Or whatever. Anyway, so Rabbi Rubiat says, I checked this when my wife asked me about it. He was the first place that I looked, actually. And Rabbi Rubiat says that it's okay. He says you're allowed to use... don't worry, the show will be about you next week, okay? you're allowed to use an apple core or whatever it's called. Why? Because he says almost all apple thingies like that, which is definitely true for ours and probably true for yours also, they leave some of the ochel, meaning some of the actual good part of the apple, together with the core. So basically it's the same thing as taking out the fly from the drink, where you take out fly and part of the drink. Same thing here also, you removed part of the apple that you would want, that you would eat, together with the core, that you don't eat. He says, according to the Mishnah Berurah, it should be fine. And he says it's mutter to use. The Shmir Shabbos disagrees, though. And this is very interesting here. Okay? The Shmir Shabbos...
Dodgy things, yeah.
What?
Dodgy things. What you define as the core.
Uh-huh.
It's pretty accurate.
You think so? Mine is, there's always a little bit of... I mean, if you would cut off part of the rest of the core, would you have something you could eat there? Yeah, Joel, eat it as a little bit.
Yeah. Some.
Okay.
But you wouldn't, though. I mean, that's...
Yeah. Yeah. You know, eat that.
You'd probably toss that anyways.
So maybe yours is not as good.
If you had it naturally, you would never go that close to the core. Maybe, like you would discard it.
I hear what you're saying. He seems to think that as long as there's a little bit of it there that's edible, then it's fine. Mine maybe is not as good as yours. Mine usually there is at least a little bit. If I wanted to cut off a little piece of the end of the core, it would work. Like I'd be able to. Not even like, you know, actually cut off a small little thin slice. I'd probably be able to do it. Anyway, but maybe you like the Shmir Shabbos better. The Shmir Shabbos says it's still a problem. Okay. He says... Even if you know that part of the fruit is going to stay stuck to the pit or whatever, you know, that the core takes off, meaning even according to that, it would still be a problem. I mean, he disagrees, basically. And he says, basically, the reason why is because your main intention is to take out the core. That's the main thing that you're trying to do. So even if you got a little bit of it stuck in it, that's not, you accomplished your goal. And he says, in addition to that, the other reason why it's a problem is that you use a kli. Okay, this is where it's an interesting machloka. You think about this for a second. He says, because you used a kli, it's usher. Okay? Rabbi Rubiat apparently felt that even though you're using a kli, because according to the Mishnah Berurah, you're taking off part of the good with the bad, you never did boer. That's not boer. Okay, boer is when you take the good from the bad, or the bad from the good, or whatever, and there's nothing left. But in the case of the fly and the drink, or whatever, that's not boer. If it's not boer, you can use a utensil. That's what Rabbi Rubiat seems to have thought. And the Shmir Shabbos Pachas seems to disagree with that, which is an interesting machlok as you think about it. Do you follow the rules of Borer when you take out, you know, the case of the fly or the case of the core? Do you have to follow the rules of Borer? Meaning, the other example would be, let's say you did that in order to eat it 3 hours from now. It wasn't miyad, it wasn't for immediate use. Is it okay? Same question. You know, if it's not Borer at all, it's not classified as Borer in any way, then you don't have to follow the rules. You can use a utensil, you could take it out for later use for 5 hours later. And if it is considered to be a question of boer, then maybe you could take it out if you take off some of the good from the bad, but you can't use a utensil, and you have to do it for immediate use. So it's interesting. That seems to be an interesting machlokas here between these two opinions. Now, again, I haven't researched enough to know which one I think makes more sense, because you have to look for really good sources on this point. At this point, you really have to look carefully in the Makoros and see, do we have other examples in the sources where they talk about a case of, like, the fly in the suitcase and talk about whether you could use the utensil or not. Offhand, I couldn't think of anything myself, but anyways, this is Tzarechian. So I guess, you know, because we're talking about a potential issue of Raisa, we're talking about a real kli. It makes sense that maybe you should try to be machmir, even though in my family I told him I already saw Rabbi Ruby and I thought it was okay. But now that I found the Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa, so it could be that it makes sense not to use it on Shabbos. Or at the very least, I guess it would probably make sense to follow Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa here to not use it. But was they?
Still talking about apple.
Yeah, yeah.
Apple's already been peeled.
Okay.
I want to slice it up. I like to eat thin slices. I take my peeler and I now.
Okay, so you're asking a different question. Okay.
Totally not borer.
Okay.
I'm using that clique. Totally not borer. So you're saying it still might be borer. It's a problem.
So this is a different thing. There's two different things. One thing is to use the core thing to take out the core in the middle. And the other question, which we spoke about last week, which we'll review again now just for a minute, is can you use a peeler or a knife to peel the apple?
But I'm saying the peel's already off.
Okay.
I'm just liking little pieces of it.
Okay.
I have an apple, the peel's totally off.
Right.
And now I'm peeling it and give out little pieces to my kids.
I'm
using a peeler. I'm using a peeler.
Using a peeler to cut.
I see. I'm using a definitely something designed for borer.
Okay.
It's definitely not borer because it's all the same apple.
Yeah, but you could do that with a knife.
So I would go with what Mark said. I think that in that case you're not using the peeler as a peeler per se. You're using it as a way to slice things, which you could do with your hands. With difficulty, you could do it with your hands if you really tried hard, and I've done it before. Just get your hands all very dirty. And
the question is like, what's the objective of what you're doing?
Right, exactly. Right. So I think that's where it's at. Okay. So in your case, it's not really being used to separate. It's being used to cut. In which case, it presumably should be okay. If you were using it to separate, but you happen to separate some of the good with the bad together, then that's the case that we have this question, the Shmir Shabbos versus Rabbi Ribiad, I think. Now again, Rabbi Ribiad, it could be he never saw the Shmir Shabbos at this point. I think this is a new edition. And the new edition of Shmir Shabbos and the old edition that Rabbi Ribiad had, probably he didn't mention this, but had Rabbi Ribiad seen what he wrote on the new edition, it could be he would have agreed with him. He doesn't usually disagree with the Shmir Shabbos, but okay. I will have to look into that more. Very good. Okay. Let me just see if there's other interesting examples here. I think I got the good ones here that he spoke about. Yeah, the other ones we sort of mentioned already. Yeah. All right. Yeah, we got most of the stuff. Okay, good. Let's talk about miyad. All right, the long time we have left. So now we said before that you have to do bor for immediate use, meaning in order to permit it, it has to be done for immediate use. You have to take the good from the bad. You got to use your hands or an extension of your hand with the silverware, and you have to do it for immediate use. So the question is, what is defined as immediate use? Okay, let's say you're organizing things. Okay, organizing you have a mixture of food of different kinds of foods, and you want to separate them. So take one and not the other. Let's say you have again whatever examples we have of boer. How soon before the meal do you have to do it that it would be permissible? Okay, let's say take the case of the tuna even. Okay, even the case of the tuna, let's say you do it in the permissible way. Either you take out the chunks from the liquid, or you do if your way is permissible, whatever it is. So you can only, that's still boer. It's still a mixture. So you have to do it immediately before the meal. Okay, you can't do it in the morning for use in the afternoon. All right. A similar question might be relevant to other types of preparation like that. Let's say, all right, we'll take that example. So how soon before the meal do you have to do it? That's the question. What's considered miyad? So if you... so good. So that's maybe the answer. In the Shulchan Aruch, in the Rishonim, there are different opinions about it. Some people say that it's for any time during the day, any time during Shabbos, you do it in the morning for the afternoon, that would be fine. Some people say that it has to be done like for within a few minutes. Okay, and if you did it half an hour before, that would be a problem.
What about if you did it right before everybody sat down?
That's the middle approach. That's the middle approach, and that's what seems to be the accepted lahalacha. If you look here, where is it? Here, take a look. Take a look in the Mishnah Berurah that we were looking at before in Sifkat and Dalad. Okay, shouldn't you touch Sifkat and Dalad? He says, V'chol mashabur, rotz alomar, afilu yarech zman ha-suda, kama shod, even if your suda will take 3 hours long, Okay, remember those meals? Maybe they don't have them here as much, but certainly in Chutz Laaretz had, you know, 3-hour Shabbos lunch meals. Started at 1, ended at 4. That is time for Mincha, right? So your meal is going to take 3 hours. Only have guests. No, of course, obviously. It's, who doesn't have guests? You know, my kids are now at the age that they don't want to have guests anymore. We're struggling. But anyway, the parents want guests, the kids don't. But all right. Anyway, so let's say your meal takes 3 hours, and whatever you're going to use the boer for, the food, the time that's going to be used is at the end of the meal. So do you have to do it right before you use it, or can it be done before you when you prepare for the meal? So he says, this is what the halacha is, Mikre la'alter keon shabriri samach l'suda. Okay, it's still called la'alter, immediate use, if you do it very close to when you have your meal. Okay, that's basically what you thought is, that's the middle approach, and that's what is accepted as the halacha here by most of the achronim. So basically, as long as you're preparing before the meal, and you don't get to your food that you're using, that you did the boger for, you know, a mixture of different kinds of fish or chicken or cholent that you're taking out part of for the other, whatever it is, you know, you're preparing it before the meal, you don't get to it till an hour, and that's fine as long as it's done, the preparation is done shortly before the meal. The question is, what's considered to be shortly before the meal? So some poskim said they throw out the idea of an hour, okay, sha'a. Does an hour mean an hour? Does an hour mean like a short amount of time? What is an hour? This is always, of course, this is Jewish, you know. Exactly. Did he mean an hour? It's in, I think, in the Eglay Tal mentions this, mentions that Shir. There's a few other posts also mention an hour. I think the Rashba even mentions an hour also. Because what did an hour mean? So some people say it's dafka an hour. Means that you have an hour before you prepare your meal. You do it within an hour. When your meal starts, then you're fine. Others say, well, no. It doesn't mean an hour. Okay? It means an hour. An hour is, you know, an approximate amount of time. And this is what the Shmir Shabbos basically says here. This is also the Igros Moshe, or Moshe Feinstein says this as well. And this is, I think, what's more accepted. He says that there's no exact amount of time that you're defining for boger. Okay. He says that basically the amount of time that it takes a person or whoever's preparing, the amount of time it takes them to prepare for their meal. If it takes them half an hour to get ready before the meal, then you have half an hour. Within that half an hour, you should do whatever, boer, ochel mitoch psolet, whatever you need to do, it should be done during that time. Okay? It should not be done, let's say, before you go to shul. Let's say that you go to shul at the end of davening, and you do your boer at 9:30 in the morning, go to shul, come back and have your meal at 11. That doesn't work. Okay? That's not samach l'suda. Okay? That's what they say. That's not going to be okay. So basically, again, you don't have an exact shear, but again, you have to estimate about how much time it takes to prepare, and then you work based on that. What would be practical nafkaminas? So again, we mentioned one before. I'll give you one or two more here that the Shmir Shabbos mentions. In some of the cases we talked about last time, about peeling fruits or vegetables. We said that it is mutter to peel fruits and vegetables on Shabbos for use. Again, depending on which type of fruit or vegetable, some say you can use a peeler, some say maybe not, you have to use a knife. Again, we talked about this before. It depends on how much, what's edible and what's not edible. Meaning we said that if a vegetable is edible with the peel, then you could probably peel it on Shabbos also. Some say you could even use a peeler. That may be the example of a cucumber we mentioned. Others say maybe not a peeler, but you definitely could use a knife. That's an extension of your hand. That would seem to be okay, even though you have a question, can you really peel with your hand or not? So I don't know, maybe you can't peel with your hand, but even if you say that's a problem, it's still okay. And this is what we mentioned also last time, because can you eat, if you need to eat the vegetable without the peel, is there any way to do it without peeling the vegetable? The answer is no, you gotta peel it. So we said basically anything that you have to peel in order to eat on the inside, you would be allowed to peel on Shabbos. Okay, at least with a knife, maybe with a peeler also. That's why I said the bottom line was a couple weeks ago. So according to that, even if you have fruits that you would not eat otherwise, we said, again, the case of the eggshell, the case of peels of certain kind of fruits that you wouldn't eat, maybe carrots or potatoes. Again, potatoes, I guess, they're not cooked. Say that. Yeah, kiwi. Onions, any of these kind of cases. So they say that it's generally mutter to peel it on Shabbos in some form. Okay. However, because it's still assumed to be a situation of boer, of separation, so you have to do it shortly before the meal. Okay. So that's where this is practical. Okay. Let's say you're peeling vegetables for a salad at lunch. You can't peel it the night before, and you can't peel it at 9:30 in the morning. You got to peel it within whatever time, half an hour, 45 minutes, however long it takes you to prepare for your meal. Okay. That's a very important nafkamina. That's what he says here. You can prepare as much as you want in order to be ready for your meal, even if it's a big meal and it's going to take a while, etc., etc., etc. But it's got to be shortly before the meal, however long it takes. Okay, any questions about that? All right, very good. That's an important point. Now, this is another interesting one. Okay. We said a few weeks ago that Go report to most postcom also applies not just to foods, but also to non-food items. Okay, we said according to most postcom it applies to books, to clothing, to other things, maybe to bottles and all kind of stuff like that, if they're close together. If they're all spread out, maybe not. But if they're all close together, that one could argue that it's a mixture. We said many postcom that that's a tradition of Borer.
What does that mean, close together? Like if they're on the bookshelf?
Okay, so that's a question. If they're on the bookshelf, the answer is maybe. There, again, you're using it, you're taking it out for immediate use. We'll get to it, okay? Anyway, the question is, in all these situations, you know, I'm going to take the one that I want for the one that I don't want. So I'm doing ochel mitoch psolet. I'm using my hands to take out the book, or I'm using my hands to take out my clothing. But the question is, okay, when am I using it? All right. So usually a book, when am I going to use a book? I take out a book from the shelf. When am I going to use it? Usually you use it right away. So again, we'll get to that in a minute if you don't do that. But the more common example possibly might be, let's say you're choosing clothes. All right. And let's say, again, guys, this is not so relevant. Well, maybe, I don't know. I'm assuming that for guys it's not so relevant, but for females who wear, you know, five different outfits on Shabbos, one for every couple hours, sorry, it wasn't so nice, but you get the idea, okay. Let's say lefachot, that you know, one at night and one during the daytime, okay. So let's say, or maybe not even for sorry, I didn't want to hit too close to home here. Okay, apologize about that. Yeah. All right, more practical. Let's say that it's for the kids. Okay, let's say that the kids got their clothes dirty the night before, and they're going to need more clothes for Shabbos morning. And let's say either you or your wife wants to have their clothes ready the night before in order so that they could just put them on in the morning without having to go searching for things. Can you choose their clothes and take them out Friday night so that they're already ready for Shabbos morning?
No, it's preparing. No.
So it might be a problem. Okay, why? So basically what you're doing is you're taking out what you want from what you don't want, which is fine, but if you're doing it the night before, then you're doing it not miyad. It's not for immediate use, correct? So then the only question is going to be, well, is the clothing considered to be a mixture or not? Okay, if it's not a mixture, then it's going to be okay. If it is a mixture, then it's going to be a problem if you hold that Borer applies to clothing and to books and stuff like that, which we said most postcom do. Not all, but most postcom do. So if that's the case, the question is, how do you define the mixture? Okay, where is the clothing? What do you say? It could be inside a drawer. It could be on a hanger, like on a clothes rack. What's going to be considered a mixture? So, and also, what different kinds of clothing do you have?
Pieces. How are you mixing them? So that's the thing.
That's also a question. What's considered to be
the mixture? Really? Yeah. The mixture?
So the answer is maybe the different pieces are a mixture. Okay, you have some shirts and you have some skirts and you have some undershirts and sweaters and whatever. And if they're mixed up in a mishmash, or even on the even if they're on a rack, and you have five different shirts on a rack, and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 hanging on hangers, that may be a mixture. Okay, each shirt is distinct. You don't want this shirt, you want that shirt. So that might be a mixture also. I'll tell you what Shmir Shabbos is.
Yeah. All lined together.
Also.
I grab one in the middle.
Yeah. Also a question.
They're all the same. They're all the same.
So the Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa talks about that also. Now again, we talked about it a few weeks ago. We said, is there a question of Borer if it's all the same type? Remember that?
Right.
Remember what we said?
I thought we said no.
So you're right. We said no. If it's all the same type, it's fine.
Yeah.
What?
You're not choosing.
Correct.
But then you have to promise
but,
the time. If I have,
but what if you have a mixture, if you have three different...
underwear that nobody ever sees, and each one completely different design, and I grab one versus the other, I don't care which one I have. I grab one.
Right. Oh, okay, good. So in that case,
it's different.
Right.
Each one looks different if you were to stare at it.
Right.
Nobody's going to see it by right. me, and I don't look at
good
it.
Good point. Okay, good point. So usually it's going to be assumed that if you really couldn't care less, and you don't even bother to look to see what you took, then that's probably fine. The question is, if you specifically chose one and not the other, okay, you have different kinds of shirts, different colors... Okay, blue shirts and you have white shirts, and you want the white shirts for Shabbos. Okay. So that's gonna be a question. If you have three different types of sidurim, all right, and again, if you take it for davening in the morning, it's fine. But let's say, you know, you're gonna take it out the night before because you want this sitter, and you put it at your seat, and you don't want that sitter, which is right next to it. That might be a question.
Oh, wow.
I'll tell you what the examples here are. We're gonna end with this. So again, I'll read you. I do this also sometimes. When I go to one of the shuls, I'm not going to say which one. Not on Shabbos, but during the week. There's like, they only have like one or two siddurim. They're the ones that I really like. And I know there's some other person that comes to that minion also that likes the siddur too. When he gets there first, he takes it first. So I sometimes hide it in the back. Make sure that he can't get it. So he wouldn't look for it, but whatever. I feel a little guilty sometimes. I try to make a noise. It could be visible, but it's like behind, but he could, whatever. Anyway, so again, if I really wanted to be me, I would take it and put it in my seat and like underneath, you know, in the box or whatever. But all right, I thought it was too much. That's not nice. But that would be the example, you know, in this case, if you wanted to do that Friday night because you dafka wanted that one. Anyway, so I'll just tell you what the Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa says here at these points. And again, there are some different opinions about this, but this is, you know, seems to be, even though it's a little bit interesting, it's interesting, and we may not have thought about it, but these are actually very important nafkaminas that, according to many postim, are absolutely true. So he says here the following thing. He says, "Harotel lotzi begad mibein begadav." If you want to take out one piece of clothing from the other pieces of clothing, al yasakin el samach levishato. Only do it soon before, shortly before you want to wear it. Okay, and you should be careful not to do it. I'm summarizing in English now. Make sure not to do it the night before, and he mentions specifically the kids' clothing, in order to wear in the morning or something like that. That's not considered to be miyad, and he says that's going to be an important point. Again, if they're all white shirts and they're all exactly the same, then it's going to be fine. And if you don't really care which one it is and you don't bother to look, then that's also fine. But again, if you have a mixture of different shirts, or you have some shirts and some pants or whatever, and you specifically look on your hanger to see which one it is and you pick the one that you want, so this, that would be relevant to this point. Okay, that's in terms of the clothing. In terms of, well, Sfarim is very tricky. All right, so we'll mention Sfarim very briefly, but Sfarim is a bit of a question. How do you define what's a mixture in terms of Sfarim? So that's what Ziv asked before about the stuff on the wall. I'll tell you what he says here. Okay, harotzel lotzi ezo sefer mibein Sfarim acherim. Somebody wants to take out a sefer from other Sfarim. Im ha-sefer lo nikar mibachutz ezohu. You can't tell from the cover on the outside which sefer it is. Okay, interesting, right? So then he says, al yasakin el samach lifnei ha'iyun bo. Don't take it out until right before you want to use it. Very interesting. And if you want to use a long time before, for whatever reason, he says, take it out and look at it briefly at that point and not wait till later. Then you're using it immediately, and that's fine. Avali says, kesha sefer nikar heitev ezehu, if the sefer is very recognizable, which one it is, kegon sheshmo shel sefer mofia beirur agabe kichada sefer, if the name is in big letters on the side. So then he says, but you're allowed to take it out whenever you want. So basically what he's saying is, if you have a big mixture of books on the shelf there, and they're very different from each other, and you can see on the back, on the cover, it says which one, what the name of each one is, mm-hmm. that should presumably be fine to do whatever you want. No problem. There's no issue of borer whatsoever.
You're specifically taking out exactly what you want.
Yeah, but he would say that's not the same. It's not a mixture. Okay, why is it not a mixture? Because each one is very, very separate and distinct from the one which is next to it. That's what he says.
Same thing about my clothes
okay.
as well.
About what?
If I have my striped blue shirt, and I have my white shirt, and I have my...
Right. I hear what you're saying. So that's why I agree with you. And originally, this halacha, I think in other places, they don't mention this point. They don't say what he said here about the different kinds of books. So you're making a correct hara. My answer for you either is that you have to be machmir about the case of the books more than what he says here, or the case of the clothing, you could be mekel in that case, which I was saying it's better to be machmir, but you're right, that is a tzad to be mekel. One could argue that in that case, that would be okay. What he says here basically is as follows. He says in the footnote that that he says at some point Rosh Shlomo Zalman Orbach told him that as follows, that maybe that if they're in a certain order, okay, on the bookshelf, then maybe that's not considered to be boer, because they're in order. Okay, that's not considered to be a mixture. It's not considered to be mixed up. And then he says, even if they're in the bookshelf, okay, that by itself might not be considered a mixture. Maybe a mixture is only when they're piled up like this. Maybe this is a mixture. If you put 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, that's more of a mixture than on the bookshelf. The bookshelf is where they go. That's their normal spot. They're supposed to stay in and be there. So again, he doesn't give you like set ideas here. I mean, he says one thing and then he says, well, maybe it's not true. It's really not so clear exactly what to say about these points. He says also that maybe it's only a problem, what I told you before, if they're very, very similar to each other. And this is what's interesting. He says here that if they're very different, then it's not a problem borer. But then he says that if you have to look at them very carefully to see the difference, then maybe it would be a problem. For example, he says if you have like a set of Gemara, and you want the brachot and not the Shabbos. And on the outside, they're all the same. They're all the same type, but they're all art scroll, they're all Hebrew, whatever. They're all the same kind of shas. Mm-hmm. Just the Masechta is different. He says that might be considered a mixture. Okay, mm-hmm. That would be a mixture. Why? Because they're similar enough that you have to look at them very carefully to see which one is which. So if that's the case, so then if they're very, very different from each other, then maybe it wouldn't be a problem. But if they're close enough together, you have to look at them carefully, then they would be a mixture, and then you'd have to take it out shortly before you want to use it. If you take that approach, so then you could say that the clothing, that would be the same thing, that if you have basically clothing which is very, very different, you have a suit and you have a dress, you have a suit, and you have a shirt. So maybe between those things, maybe that wouldn't be a problem of Boer to take it out beforehand. But if you have five shirts and they're all, you know, similar, they're maybe white or blue or whatever, but you have to look at them to make sure you see which one they are, especially in the dark where you can't see so well. So then you could still argue that in that case it would be a problem. I mean, they have to take it out for immediate use and you can't take it out the night before. So again, the bottom line is that whatever you do, there is what to be lenient by, because there are a lot of, there's not everything is so clear here. And we mentioned last time also, some people say anyway that there's no boer when it comes to these big items like shirts and books and stuff like that. So we try to be machmir, but any case where there's any suffix whatsoever, there's probably room to be a little bit more makil. So again, l'chadchila, try to be machmir about some of these things, but if it's, you know, you can't figure out or whatever, it's difficult or you're not sure, you know, so there seems to be that there may be some room to be lenient about these things. That's basically the story. Another crazy one here, he says about using soda bottles. So you have soda bottles in your fridge and you want to take out some but not the other ones. Maybe you can't take them out. You have to take them out right before you use them, because otherwise, you know, you're taking out, there's a mixture of soda bottles and you're taking out the one that you want from the one you don't want for usage in 3 hours from now. He says take them out shortly before the meal if they're pretty similar to each other. Very interesting. Oh, so then he says, I think he says for that reason it's okay. If the only reason you want to do it is so they shouldn't be cold, then he says it's okay. Take them out a little bit earlier. Okay. Any questions? Sure. Later. Okay. Yashar koach. So next week we will finish up about meraki. Meraki basically is sifting liquids. We'll talk about filters on water next week. Water filters on your sink, Brita filters, and stuff like that. And then we'll move on. We'll be done with boer, and we can move on to tochin, to grinding and cutting and stuff like that.
You've got a week to prepare all your utensils.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Okay. Shkar.